The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
With us today is Sam Stovall, Chief Investment Strategist of S&P Capital IQ Equity Research. He's kind of a legacy on Wall Street because I used to listen to his father many years, and I was pleased to hear we talked about him at the break. Sam, I was pleased to hear that your father's alive and well. He's a fine gentleman.
Thank you, Mike. Yes, he is. He's 87 years old. He's still active, and every Monday he calls me and says, "Sam, I'm doing a conference call on Wednesday. You going to send another think piece?" So I know he leverages my work.
Well, you know, and I think it's really great because they used to ask if you were Bob Stovall's son, and now they're asking your dad if he's your father. I think that's a great thing. And I'm sure that makes your father very proud. So that's right. It's great. Well, listen, I would be remiss. I'd probably get tarred and feathered down here in the South if I don't ask you what your thoughts are on Bernanke. I think there's they always make days like today quite entertaining. You know, I think it's more media entertainment than it is substance. But do you expect anything from Mr. Bernanke that we have not heard before?
I think that he is going to do his best to ensure that the street knows that there is a very big difference between tapering and tightening. I heard somebody say the other day that FOMC should now stand for Federal Open Mouth Committee, because they've just been overdoing it in terms of trying to be transparent, and as a result ended up being more opaque or translucent at least. So I think that while they've been trying to communicate as much to people as possible, they have allowed the analyst to read between lines that might not even be there.
Absolutely. And do you suspect that we'll get some kind of tapering between now and the end of the year?
I would say between now and the end of the year, the likelihood is very, very high. The question is how soon or late within the year. S&P Economics is still sort of holding out for the early part of 2014, late part of 2013, but I think Wall Street is starting to build into their expectations maybe something in the latter part of the third quarter of this year.
What is the difference, Sam, between tapering and tightening?
Well, tightening is what we've all been used to in the past, in a sense what they used to call the removal of the punch bowl, where the Fed actually starts to raise the short-term or Fed funds rate in order to restrict the availability of money, basically making money more expensive, and would cause some people to have second thoughts about buying that car, buying that additional home, etc., and therefore remove some people from the loan process. The tapering program simply means that the Fed is going to ease off on the bonds, the mortgage bonds, the treasuries that they have been buying every month to help stimulate the economy. They've been pumping an awful lot of money into the economy to keep inflation low, to keep interest rates low, because let's face it, Congress has not been doing its job regarding the sequestration or regarding the removal and reduction of our overall debt burden.
Absolutely, you're right about that. Now, how can a average investor, or how should an average investor respond? You know, there's going to be a lot of fear. There's going to be a lot of overreaction. It was amazing the amount of overreaction in the marketplace just a couple of weeks ago in late May in terms of when there was a slight movement up in the 10-year bond, and oh my gosh, the bond funds, everything overreacted. How does first and foremost, how do investors protect themselves with this tapering that is coming in the future? And how do you make money in it? Is there a way to make money in it?
Well, I think the way you protect yourself and the way you make money in some ways could be the same thing. The way you protect yourself is by not overreacting. The interesting thing is that we've experienced what some people think is a lot of volatility, but when you compare it with last year, when you compare it to the average since 2008, we're only looking at the number of days on the S&P that have been up or down by 1%. That is half of what we have experienced on average since 2008. Indeed, we would have to see 15 days per year in which the S&P declined by 2% or more in a single day just to get back to the average since 2000. So we're experiencing very little volatility. And even if the volatility were to pick up, as I think it will, I think you could respond to it the way passengers on an airplane respond to the pilot coming over the loudspeaker saying we're approaching turbulence. What they do is simply fasten their safety belts.
Now, are you concerned with people that have some of these bond funds? You know, my concern for bond funds there is always is they're kind of a black box to me. I don't know exactly what they own, and I'm not so sure that their duration that they is where I would like it to be. Would you recommend that people take a closer look at their bond funds, maybe go to individual bonds? How do you think they should respond in their fixed income portfolio?
Well, they certainly should be aware of what they own. Think of when interest rates move, think of somebody wagging a very long stick. The very far end of that stick wags the greatest, whereas what is closest to the hand wags the least. And so you could equate that stick to maturity or duration. The longer dated bonds, like a 30-year bond, 20-year bond, will wiggle much more greatly with changes in interest rates than will the shorter maturity, shorter duration bonds. So if you are looking to make some changes to your bond holdings, then in general you would say that in a rising rate environment, you want to shorten your maturities because they will then get hit least.
Now, what impact do you think this will have on the stock market? You know, a lot of people have money invested there. Fortunately, they hung on and didn't sell out, and everybody's 401k is looking a lot better now. What impact do you think this taper will have on the market? Is this market, you know, we've heard so many people say that this market is driven strictly or primarily by the money the Fed has injected. In fact, it seems like we have an artificial market because we have an artificial economy. What are your thoughts on that?
I disagree, because when I look to economic growth, yes, it is definitely a subpar. We're calling it a half-speed recovery because it's growing at about half the speed that we normally have seen in each of the first 4 years of economic recovery since World War II. But at the same time, corporate earnings are improving, and so I would tend to say that it's not just smoke and mirrors that are causing the stock market prices to rise. Also, what I would do is I would say, let's create sort of a worst-case scenario. Let's go back to 1994 and early 1995 when the Fed engaged in 7 rate increases. The yield on the Fed funds went from 3% up to 6%. And what happened to different asset classes? Well, actually, the S&P 500 rose by about 1.5% if you include dividends. And the Barclays aggregate, which is like a basket of bonds, declined by only 3.5%. So even with a full year of rate increases that doubled in the end, the portfolio still held out fairly well.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Sam, you made an interesting comment to us during the break. You said, well, they could start to taper, but they could also untaper. Can you elaborate a little bit on that? Because I don't think anybody, first of all, nobody that I know of has made that point, and I'm not so sure any of the investors are thinking that way.
Well, what I mean by that is when I think of tapering, I think of a patient being in a hospital. The doctor comes in and says, you know what, I think you're getting well enough that I'm going to take you off of the IV. I'm going to take you off of the artificial stimulus to keep you going. Now, initially, the patient might say, well, gee, doc, do you think I'm really ready for that? And that's why we've been seeing the volatility in the market. Investors are questioning whether the U.S. economy is strong enough to stand on its own 2 feet. Just like in a hospital, if the doctor finds by monitoring your vitals that, no, you're not well enough, let's put you back on the IV. So the Fed has said, yes, we can start to taper, but if we see additional economic data that indicate that the economy is not healthy enough to stand on its own 2 feet, then we will reintroduce the bond buying program. So they can definitely, it's like a rheostat. It's not just on or off. They can regulate how much they do purchase of mortgage-backed as well as treasury security.
All right, so it's not going to be set in stone, just like the condition they've had now with the QE3s. That's not set in stone. If they reverse their decision and start doing something else, that's not set in stone. So that's why I keep telling you folks that it's really important to have a strategy and have a strategy that's flexible. Investment is a dynamic process, not a static one. So you need to have a strategy. It takes a lot of things into consideration. Sam, what are your thoughts on the market now? We've had a very, very strong year. In fact, I go back to your book. By the way, folks, if you have not gotten a copy of this book, you need to. Just go on to Amazon.com. It's called The 7 Rules of Wall Street, Crash Tested. And this is a book that Sam wrote several years ago. And Sam, rule number two was, as goes January, so goes the year. Well, we had a great January. We had a great February, March, April. We've had a great year. Do you expect the second half to be as nice to us as the first one was?
Well, history is a great guide. It's never gospel. The answer is yes, that sort of like the old Herman's Hermit stanza, second verse, same as the first. I think that we'll probably have a similar direction. The market will probably end up higher at the end of the year than it is right now. But I think one thing new will be thrown into the equation, and that's what we were talking about before, that's volatility. I think because people are uncertain, because the bears are, in a sense, getting a stronger grip on this tug-of-war rope, that we could see more back and forth. But when we typically have a strong beginning of the year, it provides momentum for the rest of the year. Here's an interesting case in point. Since World War II, there have been 26 times that the market was up in January and February, February being a month that is typically down. Yet in all 26 years, the S&P posted a positive 12-month total return. And in 24 of those 26 times, it was up in the remaining 10 months of the year, meaning after that indicator showed a thumbs up. And then finally, the average total return for those 26 years was a gain of 24%.
Wow.
So if history repeats, and there's no guarantee it will, we still have more upside to go.
Well, I hope you're right. A lot of people feel like those last couple quarters of the year might be different. So yours sounds much more optimistic. I'll take yours. Now, rule number three was sell in May and go away. And I was talking about this in late April. We talked about it at the beginning of May. That would have been a really poor decision this year. I guess some of these adages don't work out the way they used to, do they?
Well, no adage works every year. And I think that with Wall Street adages, Murphy's Law gets in the way as well. What I mean by that is that the year you give up on an adage is the year that it'll start working again. Sell in May, well, the market topped on May 21st. So you could say, well, I didn't tell you when in May to sell. What it basically indicates is that from 1945 to the present, the S&P was up an average of 7% from November through April, but only 1.2% from May through October. Now, 1.2% is still better than what you would get in cash, so I never think it's good to sell out entirely. But what investors have been able to do is, if they were to rotate into the more defensive healthcare and consumer staples sectors, since 1990, they would have added 4 percentage points to their portfolio's return each year with reduced volatility. Of course, there's no guarantee that that'll work going forward, but it basically says May through October is sort of a defensive period, whereas November through April is a very positive cyclical period.
Now, we've hit new highs, of course. So, as you said, we hit new highs. Actually, just I guess when they started talking about tapering, topped the market. They were talking this morning that what we're going to go through right now over this next week or so is going to be a test, because here we are, we're almost back to the new highs before. And that's why so much attention is being paid to what Mr. Bernanke says today about what he's going to do in the future. Do you think this is a test of the high? Do you think that we're just going to continue to move higher and maybe get to 16, 17,000 or higher?
Well, I look primarily at the S&P 500, not surprisingly. And right now we're a shade below 1650. The
right.
All-time high is about 1670, so we're only 20 points away from the all-time high. Yes, we will be testing that all-time high our belief is that we surpass it. We go up to the 1,700-plus level on the S&P 500.
Wow.
But then here's the real question. What happens from there? We could be developing what's called a head and shoulders top, which, you know, we just went through the left shoulder. Now maybe we're tracing out the head, and then we'll probably go through the right shoulder if that develops and we break below the, let's say, 1620 level. You know, then maybe we end up with a more severe correction, which is a decline of 10 to 20%. But that's, you know, forecasting well out into the future, looking only at technicals. So it's something we have in the back of our mind. But right now, we believe that we're still in a long-term bullish trend, and the trend is your friend until it ends.
And I hope you're right. Now, a lot of, well, I say actually all of this really gets back, gets down to fundamentals. And Peggy had a question about employment, unemployment, that's part of the fundamental makeup of our society and our economy.
Right, exactly. Rex Nutting has written an article on MarketWatch this morning, and he thinks that the unemployment situation is not healthy enough for there even to be any tapering. I mean, we're seeing such progress in housing and other areas of the economy, but there are still a lot of people that are out of work.
Well, you're absolutely correct. And I think that was why we were saying that early on that, you know, we could be seeing a tapering, but then a reversal of tapering if we find that the employment trends don't continue to be in our favor. Housing is good for employment because economists guesstimate that 2 to 3 new jobs are created with each home that is built. And so that could help boost the employment situation.
Well, I hope you're right, Sam. You're one of the most optimistic people I've had on, and I just hope you're right. I hope we hit that 1,700 number, and I hope we have a great second half of the year. But more importantly, thank you so much for being with us today and for sharing your thoughts and your knowledge with our listeners.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.